It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to @LeachReport or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to our Valentine's Day edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You take your Valentine out to Wild Eggs for a nice breakfast or lunch today. Happy Valentine's Day to all of the listeners. Coming up today, we will chat with Mike Pratt, as we do on Thursdays. Jeff Pecora will join us as well. I want to talk about the Reds, UK football, UK women's basketball, all with Jeff. Justin Rowland normally joins us, had a little family situation he had to take care of today, so we are going to hear some post-game comments from the analyst on the LSU Network, former Tigers coach John Brady, coming up a little later on in the show. That's our guest lineup, presented by Sleep Outfitters. Let's go right to the Wildcat News of the Day. That's a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. A few weeks ago, I told you that it looked like Tennessee had a good chance of coming into the matchup with Kentucky on February 16th with a 19-game winning streak. And that is, in fact, what has happened because the Vols beat South Carolina last night in Knoxville, 85-73. The Admiral had a double-double, Admiral Schofield, 21-10. So Tennessee comes in here as the undefeated leader of the SEC. One game ahead of LSU, two ahead of Kentucky, heading into the matchup on Saturday. We'll get into this a lot deeper tomorrow. We'll talk about it certainly with Mike coming up here in just a bit. But going to be a lot of fun on Saturday with game day coming to town and going to Memorial Coliseum for the show for the first time. Elsewhere in the SEC last night, Ole Miss won at Auburn 60-55. So says something good for Ole Miss and something bad for Auburn. Auburn has certainly underachieved. They were top 10 the preseason, played Duke right down to the wire out in Maui, and have really struggled in conference play. And Florida beat Vanderbilt 66-57 last night in Gainesville. Jerry Tipton of the Herald Leader caught up to some former officials as well as the current head of the NCAA's officiating to talk about the call at the end or non-call at the end of the Kentucky-LSU game. John Clockerty, a longtime outstanding official, said it was, told Jerry it was basket interference. But he said not an easy play for those guys to call, which I don't disagree with at all. I mean, that's why I think they need to give them the opportunity to help them with a replay on this. And I'll get to that in just a second. The National Officiating Supervisor, J.D. Collins, told Jerry that they have discussed expanding replay to include this kind of call in the past, but they thought there were unintended consequences. I think this can be like the block charge arc in the U of L Duke game, which is also a judgment call. I also worry about the unintended consequences of going to the monitor for things like pass interference. I know there's a big dust up about the Saints game, but that is, you know, that one was an easy pass interference to call that they missed. There are a lot of them that aren't so easy, and it's a real debatable point. And I can understand at least, I don't know if I'm ready to go there with replay, but you can have the discussion. But this one, to me, can be like the block charge arc. You have the arc there that is easy to see, and they could go to the monitor and see that McMahon's foot was inside that arc, and so it should be blocking instead of charging. And it was crucial in the game, but it was the right call. Well, here you have that imaginary cylinder that goes up from the rim, which you can see with – you can't see the imaginary cylinder, but you can see what the parameters are on a replay. And I'm sure you could probably come up with some kind of computer-generated tool to even draw the imaginary line up there, and if the ball's inside of it, it's basket interference. Or if on goaltending, if the ball hits the backboard first, that's a tough call too. You can go to replay, and like the block charge arc, it's easy to tell did it hit the backboard or did it not. Was it in the cylinder or was it not? It's not like pass interference where it is more a true judgment. So I wouldn't be surprised if they add this so Kentucky could be responsible for another rule change. But we'll see. But it's an interesting piece. It's at KentuckySports.com. A couple of other quick notes. P.J. Washington named the midseason watch list for the Naismith Trophy. Ja Morant from Murray State is on that as well. Ryan Howard, one of 10 finalists for the Cheryl Miller Award that goes to women's college basketball's top small forward. The UK women do not play tonight. They play Monday, so their next game is Sunday at home against Arkansas. Sasha Kalia-Jones, who transferred to NC State, now he is leaving the NC State program. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Heading to a break, it's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Mike Pratt, when we return.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Quarter past the top of the hour on this sunny Thursday. Mike Pratt joins us, courtesy of Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. And check Mike out on Twitter, at MikePratt22. Last 36 hours, how many conversations have you had about the finish of the LSU game?
Too many to count. I don't have enough toes and fingers, man.
I'm not going to be surprised if they end up, this ends up like the shot clock review thing up in the Wisconsin game in the Final Four and 15, that this ends up being one that gets added. Because it was kind of ironic that they ended up being able to go to the monitor and get the call right on the Duke U of L game later that night on the block charge arc. And my point was, or is, that if you can clearly see his foot was in the arc, and so you change the call because you can clearly see that. In a situation like this, it's not the judgment call to me in the same way that pass interference is in football. This is something where you can clearly see on goaltending, did it hit the backboard first, or on basket interference, was it in the cylinder? And you ought to be able to review
it. Yeah. You know, I agree with you, but I think the biggest question I have is, you know, coaches prepare for every situation. I mean, you know, we would run 5-second drills, 10-second drills. When do you foul? You practice that. You find your fastest guy and time him dribbling the ball up the floor. Just if you need a speed dribble for the last second shot, you do all those things. I mean, just a lot of things coaches do. Situational. Football, basketball. Well, you know, if you're a referee, can't you see that this could be a situation you might have to deal with? And it only makes sense to allow it in this under a minute to be reviewed. And I also, knowing the coaches and the referees work together and they try to talk about how they want the game called, and they're pretty connected in that regard. So why wasn't this ever talked about? I mean, this is
good question.
It's probably not the first time it ever happened. It's just a high-profile time, obviously. And I think they will change it. It should be changed, all those kind of good things. But, hey, you know, if you play better in the last 8 minutes of the game, you win the game. So,
yeah, I mean, Kentucky, when you had a 9-point lead at home in the second half, you shouldn't. Yeah. Let those get away. And we knew offensive rebounding for LSU, they were the best in the league. Kentucky's the best defensive rebounding team. And if you look at the number of offensive rebounds for LSU, it's not a bad number that Kentucky gave up. But they came at points, I know the last two baskets at least, it might have been three, I think it was at least the last two, came on offensive rebounds. Now, one of them was a tough break where two guys for Kentucky went for the ball, and it ricocheted over to Reed, and he was right under the basket and laid it in. That was a tough break. But if you get that rebound or on the last shot, Mays does what Cal tells his guys always to do in that situation. Just throw it up high off the glass. I don't care if it goes in. We'll get the rebound. And that's what happened.
Yeah, and credit the guy trailing the play to get the mm-hmm. rebound for the hustle effort. EJ did that one time to them during the game. You know, they had some breakaway baskets in the second half that really hurt us. I thought, we just the last 8 minutes, you just need to correct it. I think we talked many times during the broadcast about their offensive rebounding prowess, and we did an excellent job till the very end. Somebody was crying or bitching about defensive rebounding. We did a good job on the glass with them. One of the better rebounding teams in the country, and we more than held our own. But this team needs to start making some hoops too, Tom. During that stretch, there were some shots missed, maybe some shots they would like to have back. Cal would like to have back. So this point in the year, a couple things happen, I think. Young players hit the wall, or guys who haven't played a lot at this level. They hit the wall for a while. Then they got to gather themselves, reload, and come back. We've seen it many times, and I know you can probably call specific players that hit the wall, then all of a sudden come late February, March, they bounce back, they reload. The other thing is hard for a young team to understand how close you have to pay attention to the details, because in high school and AAU, you probably didn't. But up here, the little things are important. Knowing the scouting report, know your players. On your opponents, know where to pass it, know what the time on the shot clock is and the game clock. All those things that get lost sometimes, you've got to button those down now. This is the time of year you button down and you pay attention to details.
Talk with Mike Pratt. It's at Mike Pratt 22 on Twitter. I remember thinking, this was, I think, after the Georgia game, Higgins had scored 23, I believe it was. It was the fifth straight double-figure game for him, a career high culminating in that with that run there. And I remember thinking, okay, Ashton's like, you know, at that point, 3 of 22 from three-point range. Teams are going to start playing him differently. They're not going to let him continue to hurt them the way that he has. And they're doing that now. And to me, you can speak to this. It seems like it just looks to me like they're in his head a little bit right now. And then quickly is struggling to make shots. And I don't know that it's the opponent in his head is just maybe, you know, his own confidence. He's a good shooter, and he's just not making shots right now. And I think he will, but at the moment he's not. So those two guys are really struggling, and that kind of speaks to maybe what was going on in that stretch where Kentucky was struggling.
Yeah, I think, again, you hit the wall as a new player in the game of college basketball. And I think we talked the middle of January. We started talking about how teams would play Ashton and some teams that weren't as successful as others. And then there's some teams that come along that can back off him and challenge him in the paint with some bigger athletic players. Okay. He just doesn't trust his jumper. I mean, you got to trust the J you got. You got to let it go, step into it. He's starting, I see, sometimes to hesitate, to almost wind up before he shoots. That just shows me that right now his confidence in his J is not very good. And quickly, I think, is trying to fight through some of that, too. Not as bad as Ashton, but I think he's kind of, at times, doesn't look as smooth shooting his ball, which means he's hesitant, and which means somehow he's thinking about missing instead of thinking about making. You know, when you get in a slump, you think you're going to miss everything. That's why you're in the slump. But you got to change your attitude and knock some shots down and gain your confidence.
Absolutely. 23 after the top of the hour. We're heading to a break. We'll be back one more segment with Mike Pratt here in a bit. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Back with Mike Pratt on this Thursday edition of the Leach Report. The Maryland Baltimore County Athletics Department sent out a Valentine's card, and I think you'll love this as much as I do. It's got the picture, it's got the school logo and UMBC in the middle of it, and at the top it says, "You'll never be our number one because we never want to upset you."
That's pretty cute.
That's good.
Clever. Like very clever. I like that.
You know, watching this game and thinking about it afterward on Tuesday night, and then thinking ahead to the game Saturday with Tennessee and their inside presence, it just serves to underscore something that you've been saying since the first broadcast we did in the Bahamas in August about the importance of Nick Richards or what he could do for this team. They could have really used some of that Nick Richards presence that we saw against Carolina and Kansas in this game Tuesday and the one coming up Saturday.
No question. Nick just seems to be struggling. Right now he's pressing. I mean, you can see that, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
He's really pressing. And
means he's fouling some usually when he gets in there because he's pressing.
Yeah, and he's just hesitant to do anything consistently. And when he does react and just play ball, he comes up with a block or something like that. I mean, but now I think he's, because he gets in foul trouble, it seems like they blow the whistle on him. He's looking around thinking, hey, this guy just put his rear end into me and moved me 5 feet, so I push back and I get called, okay? Or I just got hacked, and so no call, but I reach over to block a shot and they call me. I mean, all those things are going through this kid's head right now. He can't figure out why he's not getting any calls. And it's starting to bother him, I think. Or it has been bothering him. And I don't know if there's an answer to how you get that out of his mind. I mean, it comes internally from him. Not a whole lot of coach can do. I mean, you just got to go out there and play and try to forget about it. That's easier said than done. I mean, when you're in a slump, ask a hitter or ask a shooter. When you're in a slump, how in the world do you get out, you know?
Yeah. I wish he would do what Patrick Ewing did in the 82, the championship game, the first one for Georgetown against North Carolina. He had like two or three goaltending calls in the first minute. I think he went out there with the mindset he was just blocking everything, wherever it was. Just block it. I wish he'd go in with that kind of mindset.
Yeah, that would be good. If you're going to get in foul trouble, make sure you do something prior to your foul, you know, that's good. And I still think Nick's going to come out of it someplace. I think I've said all along, it's ultra important that he does. And he's going to catch his second wind here someplace and make some plays and be valuable in some game down the stretch. And you couldn't find a better game to have a coming out party of consistency for Nick than the one on Saturday.
Give me a quick thought on that matchup. I know we'll get into it more on the broadcast Saturday, but what are the keys for Kentucky against the Vols?
Boy, you're going to have to play some really good defense. This is a well-rounded team. This team's put together well to play together and do some things. You're going to have to play some D. You're going to have to get on the boards like you did with LSU. And I think more than anything, pay attention to details. This team, Tennessee, won't beat themselves because of experience. So you have got to have the same mindset. You won't beat yourself. Even though you don't have the experience they do, you just can't beat yourself with ill-advised shots, turnovers, those kind of things.
Yeah, I remember last year, the game that Kentucky lost in Knoxville was like two different games. When PJ, before he cramped up, he was just owning Grant Williams. And then, PJ went out and couldn't come back. And the Vols, I want to say Kentucky was up 15, 17, something like that. And they came roaring back. Mike, we'll see you on Saturday. Should be fun.
Yes, sir. See you then.
At Mike Pratt 22. And he joins us every Thursday here on the Leach Report. We are hitting the halfway point. When we come back, we'll play some of those post-game comments from the interview that our Chris Labar did with the LSU radio analyst and the former Tigers coach, John Brady. We'll get to a couple of your questions that have come in via the email, leachreport@gmail.com. And then Jack Pecoro a little later as well on the Leach Report.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Second half of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And Mike Pratt, appreciate him joining us each week on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. Coming up, Jeff Pecoro will be with us in just a bit. Right now, let me get to a couple of questions and comments that came in from you guys. One's from Rick, a frequent participant in the email exchanges. He notes that he has been saying, and he's exactly right, he sent us a couple of emails, have been touting the chances of LSU to win the SEC because of their favorable schedule. And now with this win at Baton Rouge, at Rupp Arena, that looks even more likely. Here's what LSU has down the stretch. They're at Georgia this Saturday. Then they're home for three straight games, Florida, Tennessee, A&M. They go to Alabama, they go to Florida, and then they close out with home against Vanderbilt. I don't think Georgia will beat them unless there's just a tremendous bounce from the upset of Kentucky. They could certainly lose at Alabama. Tennessee could beat them in Baton Rouge. I would be surprised if they lost anything other than those two, and probably won't lose both of those. So they've got a great shot of being no worse than the two seed at the SEC tournament. Rick certainly has been spot on with the analysis of the schedule. Kentucky needs to take care of business against the Vols potentially both times, and I don't know if that would even still get them to the top seed in the SEC tournament. If they do that, though, that would give them a shot at a one in the NCAA tournament, possibly. I think that's still going to be a little bit of a long shot at this point, unless Virginia or Gonzaga start to lose. So we'll see how it all plays out. It's part of the fun of this time of year. John Brady's the former LSU coach that is now the radio analyst on the LSU network, works with Chris Blair, who joined us on game day. Our Chris LaBarre caught up to Coach Brady after the game to get his thoughts on this game and a little bit on Kentucky-Tennessee coming up Saturday.
Well, Coach, you've been a part of a lot of great games in this series. Where would tonight rank?
Tonight for LSU to win here as in the fashion that they did is unbelievable. I think Dale Brown won here when they were ranked at one time in the 80s. But to do it in this day and age with 23 or 24,000, whatever was here tonight, and to do it in the fashion that LSU did it. And the thing sometimes gets overlooked to me, I thought LSU defensively the second half was outstanding. They flipped the field goal stat. We shot 57, they shoot 37, and that changed the complexity of the game simply by the way we defended Kentucky the second half.
What did you see on the last play?
Well, I thought Skylar Mays did the right thing. You throw it in bounds and just drive it to the goal late in the shot clock, late in the game like that. Anytime there's 10 seconds left, I just put your head down. I just tell all my players, drive it to the rim. Usually they call a foul. They did not, but the drive to the rim created help. Therefore, the follow-up rebound by Bigby Williams was a difference in the game. LSU is a very, very good offensive rebounding team. In the second half, they really went to the offensive glass well. And driving to the goal by Skylar Mays, creating help, the follow-up tip dunk. I mean, it was just set up perfect, and LSU played it the right way.
What do you think about Kentucky?
I like Kentucky. You know, they're not quite as athletic as I thought that they would have been. They have really good players. I thought Tremont Waters played better than Hagans. I thought that was a difference in the game. He makes more of a difference tonight than Tremont did in his team and Hagans did in his. Kentucky's not as athletic as I thought they may be, and I think our team's a little more athletic than the Kentucky team.
So being an ex-coach, being involved in this game for so long, how would you game plan against them?
I do perfectly what LSU did tonight. Take away dribble penetration, stop the post, make them a three-point shooting team, which they're not very good at doing, and then take my chances like that. I probably would have double-teamed on the low post a couple more times than LSU did, but they thought with their size and length that would be enough, and it was because we won the game. But certainly I would just blueprint the same game plan LSU had. Take away dribble penetration. Don't put them on the foul line. They didn't do that the second half. Make them a three-point shooting team because that's their weakest, the thing that they do. It's the weakest thing they do.
What do you see in this building occurring on Saturday against UT?
Well, I would think John Calipari is going to get this team's attention over the next 3 or 4 days. I think if they don't come out and really play with something to prove, a chip on their shoulder, whatever the case may be, because Tennessee's going to be much like LSU. Tennessee's a very efficient team. They don't turn it over. They don't make mistakes. They take good shots, and they're going to defend you. So it's going to be another game similar to this game that you saw tonight when Tennessee rolls in here on Saturday.
That was John Brady, the LSU radio analyst, the former coach, after the game on Tuesday night. And to his point about how to play Kentucky, I think it's going to be crucial moving into March for Kentucky to be able to get that outside shooting. We mentioned this yesterday that in the four losses, they've shot 26% on threes. It's what they shot the other night. Hero, Johnson, PJ, those are all reliable three-point shooters. Didn't shoot it as great the other night, but nobody's going to be perfect. But that's where you need Quickly, Baker, to also be able to to count on them to come in and give you a basket or two or three from the perimeter. So they need to get those guys going by March, along with what we're talking about with Mike, with Nick Richards. Still time for this to all come together. We'll discuss this more as we move through the stretch run of the season, I'm sure. A couple other quick questions here. Greg, he said, wanted to know why Nick Richards played only 3 minutes. It seems like they could have used his defense. Yeah, as we were just talking with Mike, they could have definitely used his defense. Nick's just not playing well right now. He's struggling with his confidence. It's been an issue for him throughout his time here at Kentucky. And last year, he never really got it back in the stretch run of the season once it started to go. He's got to break through that barrier and get that confidence back and make contributions to this team. But at the moment, to your question, Greg, E.J. Montgomery is getting his minutes. And Nick needs to go get some of those back. But he's got to go claim them himself, though. From Ron, how many SEC teams other than UK practice at facilities different from the ones where they play their home games? I know Florida has a practice facility. Mississippi State does as well. I'm sure they're probably two or three others at least. So pretty much anybody that has been able to get one built, they have one. So I know it's for some fans, it's an issue that Kentucky doesn't do their shoot-arounds at Rupp Arena. But a lot of I think, I don't know how many teams, what the percentage is that do or don't have their shoot-arounds at the arenas where they play. But I think a lot of the big ones probably are I'm guessing, doing what Kentucky does because they have practice facilities, and it's very convenient to work out of those rather than the arena. But don't have the exact answer to that one. 18 away from the top of the hour. We're heading to a break. Jeff Pecora will join us when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, and we're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can find them in Lexington, in the Palomar Center, or in Hamburg. Great place to have an omelet. I love the omelets at Wild Eggs, or pancakes, or maybe Eggs Benedict. Breakfast, brunch, lunch, everything's made from scratch at Wild Eggs.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Jeff Pecora joins us on the Kentucky branded hotline to touch several bases. We'll work that pun into that because you're getting ready to cover the Cincinnati Reds. Are you in Arizona yet?
No, I go in a week and a half.
Week and a half. Spring training, yeah. Is it underway yet? Or
started yesterday.
That's what I thought.
Catchers got there yesterday.
And with the weather we've had, that's a nice thought, thinking of spring training in Arizona.
Well, you know, the bad thing is, it's amazing, Tom, all this rain. It's actually supposed to rain today in Arizona. You've been out there. It never rains out there, so it's everywhere.
Oh, yeah, it's the front that's coming. I saw that on the news this morning that's coming. They call it the Pineapple Express. It's like this front of rain, and there'll be some snow mixed in that's coming. It's coming from Southern California to the Atlantic coast in the span of about 3 days. It's like on the express. And there's a reason for excitement for Reds fans this year. They've made some fun moves.
Well, they have, and you know, you follow this team very closely as well, and their problem the last few years, ever since they had the great year with Bronson Arroyo and Johnny Cueto and Latos and Mike Leake and Homer Bailey, where they pitched 161 of 162 games, and the Reds were in the midst of going to the playoffs three straight years. They haven't had any pitching, and now they finally have it. It's going to be very interesting to see how it all shakes out. But, you know, they go and get Tanner Roark from Washington. They get Alex Wood in the big trade with the Dodgers, and then they pick up Sonny Gray, the former Vanderbilt star. So those three guys are already not penciled in. They're written in stone, basically, in the rotation. And it looks like Luis Castillo and Anthony DeSclafani will be the next two. So that leaves Finnegan, it leaves Malley, it leaves Romano, it leaves a lot of guys that are going to be pitching in Louisville. So there's some excitement here. They've got a very deep pitching staff. Now, I don't think any of those guys are, you know, Dallas Keuchel or Justin Verlander. But at least they're innings guys who are good major league mature pitchers.
What about Yasiel Puig in that ballpark?
You know, it's amazing. I was talking to Jim Day yesterday, who was out there for the first day, and, you know, it's only pitchers and catchers, but about half the team's out there anyway. And Puig was in the batting cage, and he said, you know, it sounds like when McGuire and Griffey and Bonds and Sosa and those guys are in the cage, it's just a different sound off his bat. If he gets 600 at bats, Tom, he'll hit 40 home runs in that ballpark if he hits 230. I mean, he's just a monster.
That's going to be fun. I want to shift gears to another sport that you cover. You do a lot of coverage of Kentucky women's basketball. In fact, are you doing the game on Sunday on the SEC?
Yes.
Okay.
I will be there, too.
Kentucky and Arkansas. So Jeff will be on the call with Christy, right?
Yes.
Christy Thomas on the SEC Network Plus on Sunday. I had a listener ask me a question a couple of weeks ago, and I said I was going to get someone on that covers women's basketball to talk about this, so you can give me your take. He says his son is a student at UK. They're from Missouri, and so he's become a big UK sports fan through his son, following all the teams. And his question is, what will it take to get Kentucky women's basketball to get to a Final Four? Is it recruiting, he asks? Is it more money? Is it taller center, more speed? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, they're getting ready to do a big makeover of Memorial Coliseum. And when that's finished, it'll be just like what football did. And it's going to be a showcase. And when players are recruited and they go to Connecticut and they go to Tennessee and they come to Kentucky, Kentucky will not take the back seat to any of those other schools. That is one of the pieces. Ryan Howard is a fantastic player, a freshman. She's been player of the week seven times. That breaks a record in the SEC. She's 6'1", 6'2". She's an incredible athlete. He has three players that are transfers that are sitting out this season that's going to give them size. It's going to be Matthew Mitchell has this team on the upswing. I think this was a year that there were some question marks, but Macy Morris is playing great. Ryan, like I said, is playing great. He's got some depth at guard. I think this is a team that's going to be a Sweet 16, possibly an Elite 18. But I think next year is going to be a year where they can really take a big step forward as Ryan becomes the leader of this team. And I think that you're going to see – I don't think it'll be long before Kentucky women's basketball is considered one of the top two or three teams in the SEC. Right now, they're just behind South Carolina, Mississippi State, Tennessee. They beat Tennessee, you know, so they, you know, they're kind of on par with them. But I think they're just a step behind, you know, the elite teams in the SEC. But I think next season you'll see them step up and be able to play and match up well. Depth-wise has been a problem. He's finally got that, and I think Matthew's on the right track.
And finally, we'll switch to football. What do you think is going through Mark Stoops' mind as he makes his decision on where to go with the defensive coordinator position?
You know, it's interesting. I think, in my opinion, and I think you and I know Mark well enough now after the years we've been with him, I think he's going to try to find somebody that's not going to be a yes man to him. Yes, he likes to take control out there, especially on the defensive side, but I don't think he can have someone, and I'm not taking anything away from DJ Elliott, but DJ's always been kind of in his shadow. He needs somebody that would stand up to him and say, we need to do this, not that. I think he's not looking for a yes man at that position. And I think he has two guys on his staff. Dean Hood had a great run at Wake Forest. He was the defensive coordinator there when you know, they went to the Orange Bowl under Jim Grove there. He's got head coaching experience as well. He's a little long in the tooth, but he's one of those guys that's been a head coach before. And then I think I think Brad could be a guy that could step right up. We saw what he did with Josh Allen last year, and I think that he could take that step forward and maybe be the DC for this team. But I don't really know what Mark's looking for, but I do think he wants somebody that's got a strong will on that side of the football.
I was really impressed with what Coach House did the last couple of years. He did some creative things with moving people around. And you can do that when you have a guy like Josh Allen that can you know, drop back and cover a tight end 20 yards down the field or rush the passer. You were around the Bengals games and around you know the pro scene there. So give me your take. We didn't spend a whole lot of time on this as the cat season was unfolding. Let's talk a little bit about Josh as an NFL player and any issues you think he'll have as he goes to the next level and where might the best fit be, that kind of thing.
You know, I think that Achilles, if you want to compare him to someone, compare him to Bud Dupree. And you see what Bud has been able to do in his career at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I think that he's better than him. So I think that a team like the Chicago Bears, with the way they play their defense, obviously Pittsburgh, the way their defense plays, even the Cleveland Browns, and I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, teams that utilize his abilities where they have a stand-up guy on the outside that can play in space. And I think that's his greatest quality moving up to the next level. He's not a guy that has to have his hand on the ground and rush, you know, off the left tackle. He's a guy that can move around and can play in space. And I think that that's why the pro scouts are just drooling over him. They saw what he did. The greatest play I ever saw him make was a play that I think was kind of overlooked by some people. And then you'll remember this in a Texas A&M game, when they're at like the 25-yard line, he bats the ball down at the goal line as he was defending a guy. That, to me, shows the ability that this kid has, because that was 25 yards down the field running away from the quarterback, and he made a play that a defensive back would have been considered a really good play by a defensive back. So I think that's his greatest attribute as he goes to the next level, and there's no question in my mind that he could be a very good player. You look at a guy like Joey Bosa, for instance, the kid that came out of Ohio State a couple of years ago. He's a guy that really is just a pass rusher. Josh isn't. Josh is a hybrid player, and that's what the NFL is looking for.
Jeff Pecoro, thank you much.
Anytime, Tommy.
You'll see him on Sunday on the Call with Christie on the SEC Network Plus coverage of Kentucky and Arkansas women's basketball. And then pretty soon you'll be watching him on Fox Sports Ohio coverage of the Reds out in spring training in Arizona. Of course, he'll be be with us for the spring game, but because of baseball, he probably won't. So probably won't get him back in the booth until next fall. But spring game is coming up just a couple of months away. And coming up later today, UK softball is playing in the ESPN Elite Invitational, and their game against number 3 Oklahoma is going to be on ESPNU today, 4 o'clock Eastern time. We're heading to a break. Final segment when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Not a slice Wildcat history. This day, 2009, Jody Meeks went for 46 at Arkansas. It was the record, set a new record for an opposing player at Bud Walton Arena. It was the third time that season that Jody went for 40-plus. Happy birthdays to Jared Lorenzen, to Larry Seipel, and both Kentucky former Kentucky football players, former Kentucky basketball player Ray Edelman, celebrating a birthday today as well. Coming up tomorrow, Mike DeCourcy will join us to preview Kentucky and Tennessee. Dick Gabriel with some memories of that series, and also a little preview of Kentucky baseball opening the season at Austin Peay. And hopefully somebody from the Tennessee Network, maybe our buddy Bob Kessing, will get him lined up for tomorrow, too. So we'll see you then on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Have a great day, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks for listening to The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow The Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on The Leach Report Radio Network. Thanks for listening to